We got a lot to cover in 35 minutes. I'm hoping we can get it done. All right, page 20. First paragraph. You may already have asked yourself why it is that all of us became some very ill from drinking. Doubtless you are curious to discover how and why, in the face of expert opinion to the contrary, we have recovered, sixth time, from a hopeless condition of mind and body. If you are an alcoholic who wants to get over it, you may already be asking, what do I have to do? Right? I want to point out, it does not say, what do I have to think? What do I have to believe? What do I have to want to do? What do I have to pontificate about? It says, what do I have to do? This is a doing program, okay? And so you got to do it, okay? It's not just about coming to meetings and listening to people who are doing it. You have to do it yourself, okay? Me working the steps doesn't help anybody in here, just like my sponsor working the steps didn't help me. See, I have to take the action myself. And then it goes on to say, what do I have to do? It is the purpose of this book to answer such questions specifically. Everybody circle that word, specifically. We're going to come back to that at the end of the session. We shall tell you what we have done, right? So they're going to tell us exactly what they have done when we get into chapters 5, 6, and 7. Okay? Specifically, not generally. Specifically, right? All right, bottom of the page, they're going to start talking about some drinkers here. And it says, there's a first type that I don't understand at all. Moderate drinkers have little trouble giving up liquor entirely if they have a good reason for it, and that was my problem. I never had a good reason, right? I could just never come up with a good enough reason. It says they can take it or leave it alone. We all know people like that, right? Goes on to say, then we have a certain type of hard drinker, right? And this is what I call the acute alcoholic, right? He's an acute alcoholic. See, I believe there's different types of alcoholism, okay? It says he may have the habit gradually, badly enough to gradually impair him mentally and physically and mentally. It may cause him to die a few years before his time. But if he has a sufficiently strong reason, such as ill health, falling in love, change of environment, or the warning of a doctor becomes operative, this man can also stop or moderate, although he may find it difficult and troublesome and even may need a 30-day treatment center. Right? He may even need a 30-day treatment center. And these are the kinds of people that 30-day treatment centers were originally intended for. Right here. Right? They go, they spin them dry, they, you know, tell them a few things about alcoholism, right? And it says, if he has a sufficiently strong reason, like he got a DUI, like change of environment, maybe he comes to AA. That's a change of environment, isn't it? Right? It says he can stop or moderate. He doesn't need the 12 steps. He doesn't need sponsorship. He doesn't need to do all the stuff that I have to do to stay sober. And he's fine. Right? There's just one problem. There are people like this, and I'm not judging who's who, okay? But there are people like this in Alcoholics Anonymous. And let me tell you something, they are a vocal minority, okay? And these are the people that say, you don't need to listen to all that fanatic Rob Mason crap. You don't need to do all these, work these 12 steps. All I do is I just go to meetings, I don't drink. That's fine, right? Now, I'm the kind of guy that if you give me a choice between doing all this work and just go to meetings and don't drink, I'm an easier, softer way kind of guy. You know what I'm saying? I'm going to gravitate towards the easiest possible way, right? And that may work for you. Let me give you a little word of advice here. What got you sober may get me drunk. Okay? So I have to be very careful about what I share in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, that I'm not taking away someone else's chance for sobriety, right? And that's why I'm very, very careful about what I say, right? Then it goes on to talk about, what about the real alcoholic? He may start off as a moderate drinker. He may or may not become a continuous hard drinker. But at some stage of his drinking career, here's a perfect definition of an alcoholic. He begins to lose all control of his liquor consumption once he starts to drink. Why? Because I have a physical allergy and a mental obsession. I lose control once I start to drink. I cannot predict what will happen. That was the truth for me from the very first drink that I had to the last drink. I cannot predict what will happen when I start to drink, and I cannot guarantee you once I start that I can stop, right? Every once in a while I could, right? Every once in a while I could, But most of the time, I could not stop my drinking or control it. Okay? And then it gives us 16 different descriptions of what the real alcoholic looks like. It says, here's the fellow who's been... And if you're new and you're wondering whether you're one of us, here are the 16 questions to ask yourself right here. When I get a brand new guy who's not quite sure, I'll take him to these questions right here and I'll say, does this apply to you? Okay? It says, he does absurd, incredible, tragic things while drinking. He is a real Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Oh, incidentally, if you want the quick version of this, here's the way to tell whether you're a hard drinker or an alcoholic. If your drinking is interfering with your work, you're probably a hard drinker. If your work is interfering with your drinking, you're probably an alcoholic. Okay. Yeah. I was the latter. All right. He is seldom mildly intoxicated. He is always more or less insanely drunk. His disposition while drinking resembles his normal nature but little. He may be one of the finest fellows in the world, but let him drink for a day, and he frequently becomes disgustingly and dangerously antisocial. He has a positive genius for getting tight at exactly the wrong moment, particularly when some important decision must be made or engagement kept. He is often perfectly sensible and well-balanced concerning everything except liquor, but in that respect, he is incredibly dishonest and selfish. He often possesses special abilities, skills, and aptitudes. You know, alcoholics have the above-average intelligence. We score above average on the SAT. Our IQ is higher than the average population. We're not dumb people, okay? We are not dumb people. It says he has a promising career ahead of him. He uses his gifts to build up a promising outlook for his family and himself, and then he pulls the structure down on his head by a senseless series of sprees. He is a fellow who goes to bed so intoxicated he ought to sleep the clock around, yet early the next morning he searches madly for the bottle he misplaced the night before. If he can afford it, he may have liquor concealed all over his house to be certain no one gets his entire supply away to throw down the waste pipe. And I don't know about any of you, but towards the end of my drinking, I liked having it better than I liked drinking it. You know what I mean? Just knowing I had it if I needed it, you know? Because I knew drinking it wasn't going to be what it used to be, you know, but I like just knowing that I had it with me, right? It says, as matters grow worse, he begins to use a combination of high power sedative and liquor to quiet his nerves before he can go to work. Then comes the day when he simply cannot make it. He gets drunk all over again. Perhaps he goes to the doctor who gives him morphine or some other sedative with which to taper off. Then he begins to appear at hospitals, sanitariums, and treatment centers, right? So, I think they're talking about the real alcoholic here, are they not? And are they not talking about the real alcoholic doing drugs? I think that's what they're talking about here, right? Turn to page 142. Keep your finger right there. Turn to page 142 for a second for me. 142. Okay. First paragraph, about 8 lines down. You say that you believe he is a gravely ill person with this qualification being perhaps fatally ill. Does he want to get well? You ask because so many alcoholics being warped and drugged do not want to quit, but does he? Back on page 22. So what this tells me is that the real alcoholic oftentimes, many times, uses drugs in conjunction with alcohol. See, I'm nothing special. I'm not an addict and an alcoholic and a gambler and a sex addict. I'm just your normal, run-of-the-mill, garden-variety alcoholic. The fact that I happen to use other chemicals in conjunction with alcohol to produce a desired effect does not make me anything special. Because here's what a guy like me, when I say I'm this, I'm that, I'm this, I'm that, you know what I'm really saying? I'm different. I'm different than you, right? And that was part of my problem when I came in here. I was terminally unique, right? So I'm just an alcoholic just like everybody else, right? And when I stand at the podium of Alcoholics Anonymous, I don't need to talk about all that other stuff, right? Because I respect Alcoholics Anonymous, and I try to instruct the guys that I sponsor that they need to respect Alcoholics Anonymous. And we have singleness of purpose here, right? But the fact that I did drugs in conjunction with my alcoholism doesn't keep me out of Alcoholics Anonymous, right? All right. Bottom of page 22. Bottom of page 22. We know that while the alcoholic keeps away from drink, as he may do for months or years, and you could write right in there, old timers, many years, okay? This can be many, many, many years, and I've known people with 20, 25, 30 years of sobriety that have drank, okay? He reacts much like other men. Doesn't say I am like other men. It says I react much like other men. Okay? What's the difference? A transvestite is much like a woman. Okay? But I guarantee you, There is a difference. It says, we are equally positive that once he takes any alcohol, whatever, into his system, something happens both bodily, that's the allergy, and in the mental sense, that's the obsession, which makes it virtually impossible for him to stop. The experience of any alcoholic will abundantly confirm this. It says, these observations would be academic and pointless if our friend never took the first drink, thereby setting the terrible cycle in motion. Therefore, the main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind, which tells me I can drink, rather than in his body, which ensures that I never will be able to, right? You see, my problem is that I have a mind that tells me it's okay to drink once in a while. If I never take the first drink, the allergy never occurs. So the key for my recovery is for me to have recovery in the body, or for me to have sobriety in the body, I have to have recovery in the mind, right? And that's why the second step talks about power working in the mind, a power greater than myself restoring me to sanity, right? Right here. That's where sanity occurs, in my head, right? Okay, middle of page 23. Best description in the book Alcoholics Anonymous of an alcoholic. Once in a while, he may tell the truth. Yeah, I don't like to spread truth around too much, you know what I mean? Once in a while, he may tell the truth, and the truth, strange to say, is he usually has no more idea why he took that first drink than you have. Some drinkers have excuses with which they are satisfied part of the time, but in their hearts, they really don't know why they do it. Once this malady has a real hold, they are a baffled lot. There is the obsession that somehow, someday, they will beat the game, but they often suspect they're down for the count. I mean, I remember towards the end of my drinking, 86, 87, my poor mother, you know, and mothers always get a bad rap. You know, they're always the one trying to bail us out, and they're always the first one on our resentment list, right? Yeah. And she would come in tears in her eyes, and she'd hunt me down wherever I was and beg me to stop drinking, you know. And I'd give her, you know, this excuse or that excuse. It was this girl or this job that I lost, and that's why I was drinking. And, you know, by the end of my drinking, you know, I mean, I had reached a place in alcoholism where, you know what, I was just tired of even giving. I didn't even know why. I just say, I don't know. I don't know why I do it. You know, I couldn't even come up with a reason, you know, that made any sense, right? I just didn't know. I couldn't even answer myself why I did the things that I did till I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. All right, well, let me ask you a couple of questions here now that we're going to get into what the solution is here. Who can tell me the only requirement for membership in Alcoholics Anonymous?
The desire to stop drinking.
Absolutely true, and I will not argue that point whatsoever. How many people here believe that the only requirement for membership is also the only requirement for sobriety? No one. Okay? You see, there's different requirements for sobriety that we're going to talk about on page 25. How many people here believe that today, as they sit here, they can choose not to drink? That they woke up this morning and they made a choice not to drink. Right? Anyone? No one? Usually I get a couple. Okay. Well, that may be. We're going to find out. We're going to answer all these questions on the next page. How many people believe that if the obsession occurs, the memory of the last drink and what happened will keep them sober? Right? The pain of the last drink, right? Because we hear that, don't we? Think about the last time you drink. Anybody ever heard that in AA? Think about the consequences of your drinking. I used to hear that a lot. I sometimes still do, right? How many people believe that if the obsession occurs, thinking about what's going to happen to their family and their friends and their job will keep them sober? Well, let's see what it says on the next page. Page 24. They're going to tell us several things that will not keep me sober. Let's pay attention. At a certain point in the drinking of every alcoholic, he passes into a state where the most powerful desire to stop drinking is of absolutely no avail. So, a desire to stop drinking is not enough to keep me sober, is it? Right? This tragic situation has arrived in practically every case long before it is suspected. And here comes that funny italicized writing again, right? It says, the fact is that most alcoholics, for reasons yet obscure, have lost the power of choice in drink, right? So I cannot choose to not drink according to the book, right? I want to point out this, okay? What I can choose to do is I can choose to apply the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, which keeps me in a state of recovery. Okay? But for me to think that I have the power of... nowhere after this point where it says I've lost the power of choice in drink, does it say anywhere in here, Rob, you've now gained a level of higher understanding. You once again have the power to choose not to drink. Right? Doesn't say that. Okay? Because I'm an alcoholic, and if given that choice long enough, sooner or later I will choose to drink. What I choose to do today is apply the 12 steps of the program, which keeps me sober. Okay? It says our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent, so my willpower won't keep me sober either, will it? It says we are unable at certain times. Everybody underline that. Very important. At certain times. Not all the time. Right? Not all the time. If I'm having a bad spiritual, bad hair day, or if I'm, you know, just not on the beam, right? That at certain times, I cannot bring into my consciousness with sufficient force the memory of the suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. We are without defense against the first drink. I tried to keep going as long as I could to save you. That's okay. I'm unable at certain times to bring into my consciousness the memory of the suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago, and at those times I'm without a defense against the first drink, right? I remember in 1987 I got out of a treatment center, the third treatment center I went to, and the doctor that I saw told me I would be dead within a year if I continued drinking and using cocaine, you know? And an hour out of treatment, I was as drunk as I could get, right? And I didn't even remember what he had said, right? Didn't even enter my mind to deter me, right? It goes on to say the almost certain consequences that follow taking even a glass of beer do not crowd into the mind to deter us. If these thoughts occur, they are hazy and readily supplanted with the old threadbare idea that this time we shall handle ourselves like other people. There's a complete failure of the kind of defense that keeps one from putting his hand on a hot stove, right? See, I'm unable to remember the jails, the hospitals, the family that I hurt, the parents I let down, the money I lost. All that stuff becomes irrelevant because all I can think about is that sense of ease and comfort that I'm going to get from taking those few drinks. See, humans are blessed or cursed with a thing called dynamic memory, right? Dynamic memory is the mind's ability to enhance pleasurable experiences and diminish unpleasurable experiences, right? And thank God we have that. I mean, how many people in here have not had an event that happened in their life that was so painful that if nature didn't put a scab over it, you wouldn't have been able to survive, right? We've all had. I mean, the best example of dynamic memory that I can think of is I remember when my wife had our first child, right? She said, I'll never do that again, right? 6 months later, she said, well, maybe one more, right? And I thought and I was there. I'm like, how could you go through that again? You know, but that's dynamic memory, right? You forget how painful it was, right, ladies? Right? You forget how painful it was, right? And so and it talks about here the complete. There's the failure of the defense that keeps you from putting your hand on a hot stove. Anybody here ever put their hand on a hot stove? Anybody ever do it twice? Right? I remember when I was a kid. I was about 11 or 12 years old. And my mother had one of those station wagons with the wood paneling on the sides, right? And I was out in front playing around, you know, having a good time with my brothers. And she pulled up to the house. She'd been to the grocery store. And she was unpacking the groceries, you know. And she had to run back out somewhere, right? And I'm about, you know, this tall. And so I looked down and I saw this tailpipe and it was vibrating like that, you know. And I said to myself, self, I bet if I reached out there and grabbed that tailpipe, I could stop it from vibrating. And so I reached my hand out and I grabbed it just like that. And let me tell you something. Since that day, I have never again had the obsession to grab a tailpipe. It burned me so bad my hand was shaped like that for about a month, right? But let me tell you something. Alcohol burned me that bad again and again and again, right? And I kept going back to it over and over again, right? That's the power of the obsession of the mind. It's not only powerful enough to make me not believe the truth, it's powerful enough that it will actually make me believe a lie, right? The lie that this time it's going to be different. And we're going to talk about that more next week. All right. Bottom of the page, when this sort of thinking, what sort of thinking? The idea that, you know, it won't burn me this time, so here's how, okay, that they talk about in the sentence above that, okay? When this sort of thinking is fully established in an individual with alcoholic tendencies, he has probably placed himself beyond human aid. Everybody underline that. Very important. Beyond human aid. And this is why, getting back to page 17, meetings of the fellowship is not enough to keep me sober. Okay? Because I am beyond human aid. Okay? And if I am beyond human aid, last time I checked, most people in meetings were human. Not all, but most. Okay? It says, and unless locked up, may die or go permanently insane. Top of page 25. Now that they've told us what won't work for the last eight pages, now they're going to tell us what the real solution is. It says there is a solution. There is a solution. Almost none of us liked. Let's stop right there. Almost none of us liked. They didn't like what they're about to tell us. Okay? They didn't like what they're about to tell us. And we were talking about this at the break. Kathy and I were talking about this. That a lot of what the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is about doing things that go against my better judgment, right? That go against what I think, right? I didn't like this stuff either, right? It says almost none of us like the self-searching. Step four, the leveling of our pride. Steps 5 and 9. The confession of our shortcomings. Steps 5, 6, and 7. Or, to paraphrase, steps 4 through 9. That is the solution, right? Steps 4 through 9 is my solution. Did it say in there anywhere that meetings was my solution? No, I didn't think so. Which the process requires. Everybody circle that word. For its successful consummation, which means completion. Consummation. Okay? So what it just told me is the self-searching in step 4, the leveling of my pride in step 5 and 9, and they are the pride levelers. 5 will level your pride and 9 will level your pride. And the confession of my shortcomings in 5, 6, and 7, or steps 4 through 9, is not only necessary, it is required to complete this process. So if you're new, let me be the first one to tell you, there are requirements here. And doing the 1, 2, 3 shuffle is not enough to consummate or complete the process. You must do 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9 to complete the process. It says, but we saw that it really worked in others. Where would we see that? In the fellowship. Remember, the fellowship is a demonstration of the power of the common solution. Right? That's where we'd see that. And we had come to believe in the hopelessness and futility of life as we had been living it. When therefore we were approached, everybody underline that, we're coming back to it, by those in whom the problem was solved, there was nothing left, not 90 meetings in 90 days, right? Not take your time, there was nothing left but for us to pick up the simple kit of spiritual tools, these 12 steps, laid at our feet. We have found much of heaven and have been rocketed into a fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed. Okay, so when we were approached, here's my little blurb on that. You know, I'm glad that, you know, because here's what we say a lot of times. Well, I'll give you my phone number, you know, I'll give you my phone number, and if you need me, call me, right? Call me, because somebody will walk up to you, you know, and we wait for them to call, and then they don't call, and we say, well, obviously they weren't ready, right? That's what we do, right? See, what I do is I exchange phone numbers with people, right? Because I remember what it was like when I was new. And that phone weighed about 100,000 pounds, right? And I couldn't pick it up, right? And I'm grateful that I had people in the Fellowship of AA that reached out to me, right? And who took the time to reach out to me. See, I'm glad that Bill Wilson didn't wait around for Dr. Bob to call. None of us would be here, right? Bill picked up the phone and he called, right? He approached. This tells me I need to approach that newcomer. I need to be the one to walk up to that new person after the meeting and reach out my hand and say, I'm Rob Mason. How are you? Is this your first meeting? Let's exchange phone numbers. And if they don't call me, I'll give them a call. You know, hey, I met you at the meeting the other night. Would you like to go to a meeting? Right? Just give them a little bit of a nudge. Sometimes that's all people need. Right? And sometimes I think we can get too sober around here. We forget what it was like when we were brand new. Right? And I try to keep it green. I try to remember what I felt like. And now he's going to give us the common, remember I said that a common solution produces a common effect? Here's the common effect. Next paragraph. The great fact is just this and nothing less. We have had deep and effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized our whole attitude towards life, towards our fellows, and towards God's universe. The central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to accomplish those things for us which we could never do by ourselves, right? The entire purpose of steps 4 through 9 is to provide me with a spiritual awakening or a spiritual experience, right? Why is that the purpose? Because the obsession to drink is removed when I have that spiritual experience. As I said last week, and I'll say it again, nowhere in this book does it say stop drinking now. What it says is I work these steps, I have a spiritual experience, and the problem has been removed. It doesn't exist for us, right? We're neither fighting it, nor are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we've been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected, right? That was my experience. I remember waking up one day, I was sitting at work one day, I was about 6 months sober, I had worked these steps, I was active in the fellowship, and the thought came to me, out of the blue, that I had not thought about drinking, right? I hadn't thought about it. The problem had been removed. And for me, the obsession has never returned. Now, I've had a thought of drinking, but the obsession, that obsession that used to drive my car to 7-Eleven, right? You know that obsession, right? The obsession that used to end up at the Connections house, right? That obsession, right? That hasn't occurred for me since that day, since I took the fifth step, okay? It has not occurred for me. All right. Goes on to say in the next paragraph, if you were as seriously alcoholic as we were, we believe there's no middle-of-the-road solution. Incidentally, the rest of this chapter is all about spiritual experience. That's all it's about, okay? What is going to happen as a result of steps 4 through 9, okay? Now, I'm an intellectual alcoholic, and we're running a little short on time. We may run a few minutes over. I apologize in advance. I'm an intellectual alcoholic. I like to know why. I'm a why guy. Anybody here why guy? Yeah, I'm a why guy. I'm also an I know guy. I want to tell you what I know, right? I had a sponsor who once told me, said, you can't tell me anything you know, okay? Just don't tell me anything you know. I don't want to hear it. Sound a little rough to me. But I wanted to know why. I said, okay, I believe you that 4 through 9 is my solution, and it was pointed out to me that it's always my solution. I shared with you the when I was 10 years sober, I was ready to drink. My solution was still 4 through 9. I went back, I did an inventory, I shared the inventory, I went and did 6 and 7. I had hurt some people by my actions in sobriety, which we'll talk about when we get into steps 8 and 9, okay? And guess what? I got myself realigned. Right? I got myself realigned. I just gotten way out here, right? Off the path, right? I need to get back on the path, right? And so that's the beauty of the 12 steps. They speak to my spiritual condition wherever I am, right? Wherever I am, whatever's going on. All right. Bottom of the page. Oh, so I wanted to know why this was the solution. And my sponsor explained it to me this way. He said, you're only going to ever have 3 relationships in your life. You can have a relationship with God. You can have a relationship with yourself. You can have a relationship with others. Does that make sense, everybody? Okay. He said, 4 and 5 clears up my relationship with me, right? I can look the world in the eye, it says after the fifth step, right? I can feel at perfect peace and ease. 6 and 7 clears up my relationship with God, right? I make God the director of my life, right? I say, I'm here to serve you. Remove my defects so that I can better serve you, right? And then 8 and 9 clears up my relationship with others. So by the time I work 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9, I've cleared that channel to God and the sunlight of the Spirit can shine through. I don't know if that makes sense to anybody, but that helped me. All right, bottom of the page 25. If you are seriously alcoholic as we were, we believe there's no middle-of-the-road solution. My wife, who's also a member of this fellowship, says that if you stand in the middle of the road, guess what happens? Yeah, you get run over. Okay. We were in a position where life was becoming impossible. Step 1. And if we had passed into the region from which there is no return through human aid, we had but 2 alternatives. One was to go on to the bitter end, blotting out the conscious of our intolerable situation as best we could. Step 1, live in the problem, go drink. And the other, accept spiritual help. Step 2, live in the solution. And if I live in the solution, and that's the choice I make, I have to do what to consummate the process? I have to work steps 4 through 9, right? All right. Let's turn... Oh, one other thing I wanted to hit. It goes on to say at the very bottom of 25, this we did because we honestly wanted to and we were willing to make the effort. Everybody underline that. We were willing to make the effort. Right? My willingness is directly equivalent to my effort. Right? You can mark that down. My willingness is in direct proportion to the effort that I'm putting forth. Don't tell me that you're willing... if you're not doing anything, right? If you want to see how willing somebody is, don't listen to what they say in a meeting. Don't listen to what I say up here. Watch my feet. See what I'm doing, right? See how active I really am. Because it's easy to sit in a meeting of AA and sound really good, right? You stay around here a few years and get really good at it, right? But it's not about that. It's about what I'm doing every day. All right, page 28. We're going to wrap this up. First paragraph, we in our turn sought the same escape with all the desperation of drowning men. Everybody circle that. The desperation of drowning men, right? My sponsor said if you lose your desperation, you lose your sobriety. Anybody here ever almost drown? Right? Or ever seen anybody almost drown? What would you have done to save yourself? Anything, right? Anything, right? And that's the same way we got to work the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, with the desperation of a drowning man, right? And that's still how I work it today. And let me tell you, we talk about it around here, the gift of desperation. I will take a desperate alcoholic above somebody who's been around here for a while any day of the week. You know why? Because you tell them to do, work these steps. Okay, they'll do it. Read this, they'll do it. You know what I mean? You get somebody who's been around here for a while, the worst kind of newcomer, and I can tell you because I was one, is the kind that's been to lots of AA meetings, knows everything about it, right, and wants to argue every point with you, right? And I was one of those. You know, I thought I knew more about it than my sponsor did, right? And I was going to point out all the things he was wrong about, right? That's the worst kind, because guess what? I closed my mind to the sunlight of the Spirit, right? All right, bottom of page 28. We're going to wrap this thing up here, okay? In the following chapter, there appears an explanation of alcoholism as we understand it. That's chapter 3. Then a chapter addressed to the agnostic. That's chapter 4. Many who were once in this class are now among our members. Surprisingly enough, we find such convictions no great obstacle to a spiritual experience. Now listen to this. Here's the important part. Further on, clear-cut directions are given showing how we have recovered. These are followed by 43 personal experiences, right? Everybody keep your finger right there and turn back to the forward of the first edition for a second. Forward to the first edition. We of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. To show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered, right? So we've got the word precisely, right? Turn to page 20. Page 20. Second paragraph. It is the purpose of this book to answer such questions specifically, right? So now we've got the word specifically. Back on page 29. Further on, clear-cut directions are given showing how we have recovered, right? So when we get to page 58, and they say, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path, I believe they're talking about the path of precise, specific, and clear-cut directions. I don't know about you, right? Now, only an alcoholic would read that and say, do it however you want. Right? Here's one I love. This book's open to interpretation, right? Now, I don't know how you interpret precise, specific, and clear-cut directions, but I know how I interpret it, right? You see, here's what happens at some meetings. They go around and everybody reads a paragraph out of the book and they tell what it means to them, right? Anybody ever been to a meeting like that? I've been to lots of meetings like that, and there's nothing wrong with that, okay? But you can't take a word or a phrase and assign whatever meaning you want to it and call it the truth, okay? The words have meanings. Okay? It doesn't matter what I think about it. What matters is what the author meant when he put it in this book, right? That's what's important, and that's what I have to remember. Clear-cut directions. Now, I know a little bit about clear-cut directions. Some of you who know me know that I'm a professional chef. I have been for 25 years. So I know a lot about precise, specific, and clear-cut directions. Now, I make, ladies, my wife will tell you this is true, the greatest molten chocolate cake in the world. Okay, it's liquid center chocolate cake. It is like to die for. It's so rich. Okay, now, if you came to my work and had the molten chocolate cake and you said to me, Rob, that was the best thing I have ever had. Can I have the recipe? I would give you a specific, precise, and set of clear-cut directions on how to make that molten chocolate cake. And let's say you took that recipe and you went home and you said, you know, this recipe calls for 4 eggs. You know, I don't think it quite needs 4 eggs. I'm going to add 3 eggs. And you know, it calls for 1/2 pound of chocolate, but I like chocolate, so I'm going to add 1 pound of chocolate. And you know, it says to bake it for 20 minutes at 325, but I'm short on time. I'm going to bake it at 400 for 10 minutes. Are you going to get the same cake that I got? No, you're not, right? You see, and that's what's wrong when we start changing the program of recovery in this book. You see, what we have here is we have a roadmap to recovery. We have a roadmap to recovery. Anybody here ever gotten bad directions somewhere? You stop in a gas station, get directions, and you end up on the wrong side of town, right? Well, let me tell you something. That happens in Alcoholics Anonymous too, right? You come in here, you get bad directions, you end up on the wrong side of town, right? Anybody here ever heard of Mary Mallon? Mary Mallon had another name. Her name was Typhoid Mary, right? Typhoid Mary. Let me tell you about Typhoid Mary for those of you who don't know. Mary Mallon was a lady who lived back in the early 1900s. She was a great lady, okay? She was a giving person. She tried to help people, and she worked in a soup kitchen, right? Mary Mallon was the first person that they knew about in scientific history that was a carrier of the disease typhoid that did not actually have the disease herself, okay? So she was fine, okay? The problem was she worked in a soup kitchen, right? And she would serve people soup. And guess what happened to the people she served soup? They died, okay? A whole bunch of them. Now, why am I telling you this story? Because I believe that there are some Typhoid Marys in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, right? I believe that there are some very well-intended people. I don't think that they're malicious. I don't think that they mean any harm by it. My first sponsor told me when I went to my first Big Book workshop, if you're going to carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous, you have an obligation to know what the message of Alcoholics Anonymous is, right? If I don't understand the precise, specific, and clear-cut directions, can I carry that to you? No. Can I transmit what I don't have? No. If I haven't had a spiritual experience, can I show you where that is, how you can do that? No, I cannot, right? So I have an obligation today. I have an obligation to lay the simple kit of spiritual tools at the feet of the people that I sponsor, right? And the reason that I'm a student of this book is because I want to give them the best chance at recovery that they can get. So I feel that I have an obligation to understand what's in this book, right? And I think that's it for today. Thanks.